Welcome to Account-Based Marketing. This podcast is designed as a collection of conversations with sales and marketing leaders, sharing thoughts and practical tips for becoming more customer-centric and accelerating revenue growth. Hosted by me, Alicia Linden, CEO at Momentum ITSMA, a global B2B growth consultancy and advisory firm. Welcome to this episode of Account-Based Marketing. We've got a very exciting guest today where we'll be digging into what it takes to build valuable relationships with executives. Every organization wants to develop high-value client relationships. Easy to say, hard to pull off. Here at Momentum ITSMA, we spend our lives knee-deep in high-value accounts and opportunities, helping providers see things from the perspectives of their clients. And in today's episode, we'd like to really focus in on that. I've asked for former Shell Downstream CIO, Craig Walker, to join us to share his perspective as an executive with big purchasing power. Craig, welcome.
Thank you very much, Alicia. I'll try and live up to your billing.
Great to have you with us. I'm very excited about this conversation. I know all of our audience at Rethink London absolutely loved the panel discussion that you hosted. It was fantastic.
It was a fun panel.
Perspective. It was really, really good fun. I know you've got a vast experience, and before we kind of dig in to the meat of the conversation, would love to just give our listeners a little bit about you, your experience, both in terms of, I mentioned Shell Downstream, but you've also got lots of experience on the provider side as well.
So, potted history. I graduated in 1981 as a chemical engineer, would have made the world's worst chemical engineer. But thankfully, Shell realized that and hired me as a programmer. So I started out in London as a programmer. Got very drunk one night with my Australian boss and realized the next day when I woke up, I'd agreed to go to Saudi Arabia. So off I went there. We built a couple of big lubricants blending plants. I did all the IT. Then arrived in Dubai in 86 to head up IT for 4 years when it was just still a little town. Then Aberdeen, Scotland for 2 years. Then down to Colombia, South America for 3 years to head up IT. Then back to London to head up retail IT. That took about 17 years. I then thought, well, I only know Shell. Let me go try something else. So I joined KPMG Consulting, had 6 brilliant years there. Great organization. And I tell people that was the best training course Shell ever let me go on. Then in 2005, they tempted me back with CIO for their downstream businesses in Africa. So I spent 4 great years in Cape Town, one of the most beautiful cities in the world. And then on to Houston, Texas, where I spent 6 years as global CIO of all of the trading and supply shipping pipeline divisions. And then back to London for the final 6 years to head up all of Shell's downstream. For those who don't know, downstream is, I often say, well, it's not the upstream bit, because the upstream is where you look for it, find it, and get it out of the ground. Downstream trading, shipping, supply, pipelines, all the refineries, the petrochemicals plants, all the B2B businesses, you know, aviation, lubricants, marine, specialities, etc. And then all the B2C side. So getting more into the new energies as I completed my career. And of course, 48,000 retail sites globally, selling more coffee than Starbucks and McDonald's put together. So a big organization. Yeah, that's it. This is why I have no hair left. If you want to be a CIO, these things get to you. Shell ruthlessly retire you at 60. So off I went. You know, thank you very much. And Salesforce offered me a role as a strategic customer advisor, SVP. So I spent 4 great years talking to C-suite, understanding the challenges, the opportunities, the pressures that face them, and trying to help them get real value out of what they were trying to do. And as we all know, there are many great applications out there, many great solutions, services, products, etc. So much of transforming a company and why it's so difficult to do that is around the people. And, you know, that's always a very interesting journey. Transformation at scale is very hard.
Yeah, big challenge. Looking forward to digging into to the nuances there, Craig. But before we go there, I don't know if you're familiar with a concept called personas. You know, you've described all these different cities that you've worked in, you know, various roles across Shell as CIO, your experience at KPMG more recently, switching to the provider side at Salesforce. I mean, personas are a model, if you will, that lots of providers build out to say, this is what a CIO looks like. And before we get into what it takes to build relationships, you know, what do you think providers have got completely wrong about CIOs?
I think it's quite simple. I don't care about the product they're trying to sell. That's not what matters. I'm not interested in the product. I'm interested in people who can come talk to me about solutions to my problems, to the challenges that I face, you know, the opportunities that I'm trying to solve. If I like what they say, and I get that they've listened to me, they understand, they have value to add, yeah, I'm going to introduce them to people in my organization who will be far more interested in the product, because just maybe that product or service is something that can fulfill a need that we have. But when you're dealing at my level, it's not about the product. And I think a lot of people get that wrong. They're fired up. They're excited about their product. That's great. I would expect that. But that's not what I'm interested in. You know, yes, I've come up through the ranks. Yes, I understand IT, but I'm not really interested in your product. I'm interested in what you have to say about what you've done, how you've helped other people, and how you're going to make a difference to me and ultimately my business.
Yeah, fascinating. I think, yeah, having been at Microsoft myself, you know, I know that when you're drinking the Kool-Aid, you think what you've got in the back of your car, if you will, is the best thing since sliced bread, and you want to inform everybody about it. But keeping that front and center, actually, most CIOs don't care about.
And it might be the best, but does it do it for me? Yeah, you've got to understand what I'm up against and the point in the journey I'm on. And people often don't take time to work that
out. Yeah, have a relevant value-based conversation. Fantastic. I mean, a lot of providers, Craig, we work with, conversations that I'm having is this kind of notion of it's getting much harder to sell. It's getting much harder to market into large global enterprises like Shell. How have the last few years been impacted, as you see it, in terms of provider relationship, particularly in these kind of large-scale transformational initiatives or high-value investments?
I think there's a number of things that have impacted. If I think back over the course of my career, or maybe even over a shorter time scale, and I think they sit on both sides of the fence, right? And unfortunately, there is a fence, and that is part of the problem, right? I think number one is, if I look at the customer side, a lot of companies have stopped trusting their senior executives to do the right thing. So when I first joined, accepting tickets to a sporting event, going out, doing that sort of thing was very much an accepted norm. Indeed, as a customer, we do it for our customers, but then we get all touchy about it when suppliers offer it to us. Yet, if you don't trust me to act professionally on the behalf of the company, and you think I'm going to sign a $1 million deal just because somebody asked me out to a dinner, then come on, guys. If I'm going to really work with a supplier, I need to get to understand them, right? The second thing we've done as big companies is we've given procurement departments, in my view, far too much power. And they are set up to do what? To drive the cost of the goods and services down, not to look at value. They don't really care why I'm trying to buy the product. With the best will in the world, you know, you're asked to write a procurement strategy. At the end of the day, those guys are there to get the best deal, but deal to them is driving the cost down. That's fine. I need someone professional to do that. But we all know that if you drive the price down too much, you don't get the best people, you don't get the best service, you don't get the best after-sales service. Yeah? And that has to change. From a supplier point of view, I mean, especially in the software world, and you kind of touched on it, I think companies have given away, or I see, it's a little unfair, I see two camps. I see companies that have given away a lot of the industry experience or the CXO experience, right? You take Salesforce and the job I did there. Why did they hire me? So I could come in. Yes, I can talk about the product if you really want me to. But what I'm really going to talk to you about is, why do you want to change your business? How hard is that? How do you have to reinvent IT to do these things? What are some of the things you want to set up to do in order to make sure whatever service or product you buy, you are going to get the full value out of and you are going to be successful? But if you just start to have people who are just salespeople and you incentivize them on the sell, not on the value that's gained, not on the after what happens afterwards, not on who implements it and whether that's successful, then you've got a problem, right? And I actually think that this is why some of the small and medium enterprises in these fields are doing better, because they still have the expertise of the founders. And those founders founded whatever it might be. There's a company I work with at the moment. They are experts in their industry, and they're building a solution to solve a problem in that industry. You have immediate credibility with them when you talk to them. If I just send in a salesman, even if they're the best in the world, and they have a lot of industry knowledge, they have sales written on their forehead. That doesn't give you the credibility. So I think the suppliers have to remember, it's not just about making that sale and saying, look, aren't we great, we're the fastest growing software company or whatever, if you can't do the rest of it. Because sooner or later, yeah, you're propping up the bottom line, that's great, but your top line is going to start to falter because you don't have the expertise to give you credibility at the level you're trying to go in.
Yeah, and it absolutely makes sense. I think the kind of internal trust point that you make is a valid one, and one that people should keep front and center. And
it's kind of remarkable, I think, how that has changed. And part of me accepting an invite is not necessarily because I love that company's product. It's because I'm going to go and meet other customers of theirs who are peers, and I'm going to listen to what they have to say, and that will give me more trust in your organization and belief that you can deliver, because I'm talking to a peer who's going, yeah, I've been with them a couple of years and actually they've done this, this and this for me. Okay, that's interesting.
So it's a way of almost reference checking.
Yes.
I think fascinating on the procurement point as well. In my book, The ABM Effect, I share a story from a customer where procurement got involved and just cannibalized the contract. And actually what they were left with was not the support coverage, not the requirement. I mean, you've been right at the thick of it with the retail business in Shell and what it really takes to keep that operation running.
Well, and you know, it's like anything in life. If you push people down in price, you will get the C team because they can sell the A team somewhere else. It's just a fact. You know, this whole concept of win-win has, in some respects in the last few years, gone out of the window. It's about, I'm going to drive to the bottom price. That's fine if you're buying widgets and everybody sells widgets and the widget is simple and I can do it myself. That is not the way of big, complex transformations. Or indeed buying any SaaS software, where if you don't have a tight relationship with the supplier and a trusted relationship, you will never get the full value out of it.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Whilst listening, please hit follow or subscribe on your podcast platform to get access to our full library of recordings and alerts of all new episodes. And Craig, interestingly, as we kind of think about technology vendors, you've talked about software providers. I think quite often what we're seeing is this, still today, technology vendors are treating their customers as transactions. Let's get this deal done this quarter. Let's all rally around. And what we're seeing through our own data is, you know, customers and executives in particular want greater insights, as you talked about, that access to expertise. They want to make sure that they're rationalizing their providers in a way that's driving business value. And, you know, our thesis is it's no longer enough in this market to treat accounts as transactions. They have to be clients. You have to collaborate with them. How has it evolved during your career? You know, what have you seen across the many CIO roles and the different regions that you've worked in? Has this always been the case?
And there are very different cultures in different parts of the world. I mean, you work in the Middle East, you know, it's very much about the relationship and building a trusted relationship. The sales cycle is fundamentally different. In certain other parts of the world, people don't necessarily want the touchy-feely bit. They just want to make the purchase and move on. I think Europe sits kind of somewhere in the middle of those two. But obviously, I feel it's different in the US. It's different in Asia. It's different as you go down into Africa. But I think the whole incentivization, as we've kind of already touched on, of many of the salespeople is simply wrong. As you said, it's about getting the sales through. It's about a drumbeat of every month and every quarter, I have to be hitting my numbers. And that, in my mind, delivers all the wrong sort of behaviors. I do think, as I said, the fault can lie a bit on both sides. But if you're going to build credibility, You have to have an honest conversation with both the prospective suppliers to you, and they have to have an honest conversation with the prospective customers. And getting into the C-suite is a different thing. I'm not just going to allow a salesperson from whatever to book half an hour in my diary as a CIO. I'm sorry, other people, you know, there's often the complaint, oh, well, I can't get to the CIO. The question is, why are you trying to get there? When I first arrived at Salesforce, I would hear people say, well, I mean, just go and talk to the CIO or the CEO. And I go, well,
that will fix everything.
Yes. What are you going to say? Well, we've got a great product. Yeah, they don't really care about the product. If I think back to being a CIO, what actually did I want from somebody who was very senior at my supplier? I think it was things like to make me look good, to teach me something new, to help me solve problems, show me a different viewpoint, I don't know, expand my network, introduce me to other people. help me engage, because I am time poor. Help me engage with high level summaries of what you're thinking about, right? And if I like that, I'm going to say to you, well, that's great, Alicia. Could you go find out a little? You talked about the latest, I don't know, trends in contact centers. That's really interesting. Could you come back and tell me a bit more about that? And we start to build a relationship because you appear back at my office in a couple of weeks' time. I give you a bit longer. The best of the best would sit down and go, hey, Craig, I've found you some information. Of course, you haven't done it at all. You've got a team behind you, done it. Hey, I know you won't have time to read it. Let me summarize a bit of this for you. And you'll take me through it. And I'll think, gosh, I like Alicia. And of course, what do I do then? I stand up in front of my team or my boss and go, I've been doing some research on contact centers. Absolute bullshit. I've listened to you. But the point is, you're helping me in my job. And like anything in life, your personal life, your professional life, someone reaches out to you and helps you with something, you tend to trust them more. Now, I know you want to sell something. I know behind it as an organization. But all you need me to say is, someone comes to my office and says, oh, this woman, Alicia's called me up. She wants to talk about it. I go, she's good, you know. You should spend some time with her. That's all you need from me. You don't need me to endorse your product per se. Or when somebody comes back and says, if you reference your old job at Microsoft, we're thinking of buying this Microsoft product. All you need me to say is, yeah, I think Microsoft are pretty good. You know, I've got a good relationship with Alicia. She's on our side. Brilliant. Think about how you're going to go in and have that conversation. And I think that's what the good people do that well. The evolution I've seen is people spending less time on that and just coming in trying to sell things. That might work with the smaller companies where the CIO and his or her team are at a much lower level and they're more involved in that. But your bigger targets, not a hope in hell. You're not going to get in to see the right people.
Yeah, it feels like there's been a lot of whack-a-mole going on in the last couple of years of here are our accounts, this is the white space, let's penetrate it with these product offerings, and often losing sight of that bigger picture. Craig, you touched on a couple of really interesting points around trust. So this idea of, you know, internally executives are trusted less, there's been a decline in trust and possibly into some of these bigger transformations, how they run and the impact of IT across the wider business. But there is also a trust issue that we're seeing between suppliers and providers. And I guess that's linked to macro level trust as we all see it. How well have providers that have turned up, partnered with you, really understood you and your needs? You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, do you think we're consistently at a 7 from a provider perspective? Is it really patchy and you've got different parallels? What's your benchmark or read of the market?
I think it depends a lot on the personalities on the two sides that are engaging. My approach to this, and I do think it comes to both sides, you can't just say, well, is the supplier turning up in the right way? Yeah. I think we don't have honest conversations enough. So I think of a particular, I won't say who, but a supplier who had been supplying a lot of software to Shell. When I took over that last job, the area was a mess. And every supplier comes into your office and they go, well, I want to be a strategic partner. You know, what the hell does that even mean, right? I mean, explain in less than 100 words, right? But this particular person, I'd known them a number of years. In fact, they used to work at Microsoft, not when I had this conversation. They'd moved on. And I sat down with him and I said, look, this is a mess, isn't it? And he said, yeah, it is. I said, right, what do you want to do to sort it out? And he said, well, here's some of the things I think we need to do. And I said, okay, that crosses over some of the things. And I think these things as well. I said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Let's write an email together, which I'm going to send to you, saying these are all the things I'm upset about. Because we already know you've thought about some and you can help solve them. And I'm going to write it in a nasty way. I'm just going to write it as a statement of fact. So from that day forth, we trusted each other to have the right conversation, right? Then I think behind that, you have to set up the right structure to do this. So if you have a major supplier who is critical to you, I should be sitting down every 3 months with their most senior person who sponsors them to me, and I'm the sponsor to them, and we have a strategic conversation. Underneath that, there's maybe a monthly conversation going on between their key people and my key people about operate, you know, whatever you want to track and whatever matters. But I need the conversation at the top where we look each other in the eye and we say, I've got your back and you've got mine. Let's solve these problems together. And if you don't do that, if you ignore it, and we're all great at ignoring problems, we don't want to talk about them. It's difficult. I don't like having tough conversations. it's worth having the tough conversation. It's like anything in life, personal, professional. You've got to have the courage to have the conversation. If the other person responds in the right way, fantastic. We set off down a new path together. And from that day onwards, we have the honest conversation. We're not afraid to say, look, I'm upset because you said ABC, it hasn't happened. You know, let's talk about that. Maybe I wasn't clear about it. But I don't think you can just look at the supplier and say, oh, it's their fault. It takes two to build a trusted trust relationship. And I know at that thing I talked about, did I talk about the trust equation at that? I think I did.
You did, yeah, we discussed
it. You know, reliability plus credibility plus intimacy divided by how much you talk about yourself rather than allow the other person to talk. Go look up the trust equation as a supplier and then ask yourself, am I doing those things? And how much time am I spending on each of those elements of the trust equation? Because it works. You've got to be honest. You've got to be prepared to admit your mistakes and say, yeah, we screwed up that one, didn't we? Yeah. You know, our fault, it's not going to happen again. We've worked out why, blah, blah, blah. But don't hide things under the carpet.
Be honest and consider that trust equation. I think to your earlier point, Craig, the idea of surfacing expertise and not just having sales turn up, you know, certainly see that through all of our work that, you know, SMEs, experts are more critical than ever before at building trust is, you know, hugely valuable. I guess let's look at the other side of the coin. Craig, where has a provider completely lost your trust? Where did it go wrong? Can you give me an example?
I can't think of anything specifically, right? But if I was to generalize, it's where that honest conversation has ended, right? We all know we sometimes promise things that turn out we can't deliver. We may have promised them in very good faith. We thought we could do it. You know, salespeople do it a lot, not because they're being disreputable, but because the guys in the product teams have said, oh yeah, we can do that. And then of course it isn't as easy as you think. And I think the trust goes when you're caught out lying. Again, it's like real life. If I lie about something, if I try and cover something up, think politicians, right? If they just said, yeah, you're right, we got that one wrong. Yeah, hey, we tried to make a decision based on the facts. We got it wrong. Yeah, we need to sort this. You start to trust them again. The minute they've tried to hide it or to lie about it or obfuscate it, the trust goes. And I think that's all happened to us many times in our professional careers. And it might have been someone in our own company. It's not necessarily an external supplier, right?
And I think the larger the organization, going back to your point about from a sales perspective, if you don't have access to the information, yes, sometimes there's the information you're relaying to customers isn't on the mark.
Let's face it, marketing is very, very good and it's very sophisticated. And you can always have the get out clause in the small print that says, yeah, but what we really did, we didn't actually say, you know, we could do that. We said, okay, my fault as well for not asking you the right questions. But you in trying to get that sale and too much pressure on the sale, you know, it's like a lot of things in life. You buy them, then you realize, and the guy goes, oh, well, you didn't ask me that.
You touch on marketing, Craig. I'd love to kind of dig into this idea of, you know, how do you navigate providers? There's so much noise out there. Let's perhaps start with content. I loved the story that you shared at Rethink of one of your suppliers building out an account plan and then not sharing said account plan with you, collaborating, doing it in a dark room and then wanting to turn up. And a lot of that goes on in providers, as you know, and having been on the other side of the fence at Salesforce, you'll also know how much effort goes into developing content for accounts to really resonate and engage those clients and help inspire thinking, show value, be relevant, all those good things. What's resonated with you as you've seen something come through from a provider's marketing group, or conversely, if you've got a good example of what's just been a complete turn off?
Well, I think we all know what the complete turn off is. Someone turns up with a generic pack, they don't really know anything about you, and they do a shotgun blast of, this is what we do, and aren't we marvelous? And within 5 minutes, maybe less, I'm bored because it is of no relevance to me. You know, and all of these latest marketing tools, particularly with AI, where it's getting an ability to be a lot more focused on me. But if we take the AI out, you know, taking time to understand me and my business, right? And to introduce me to people who understand my role, my business, the challenges, the problems I'll face in delivering the required outcomes is what will turn me on and make me want to listen. And if you haven't asked those questions up front, if you've come in cold and just gone bleh with your marketing or your sales pitch, well, that's a waste of time. you know, I've already said it's not about the product. It's about, does your company really understand what it's like to be me? And you've bothered to listen to me about why I'm struggling with this. Then we should set out a vision together, right? We should be able to both communicate in clear terms where your role and my role and why it's going to solve these things, right? So, you know, it's like any good, when you come to make that pitch, we've worked through it together. You've listened. You're going to come back to me. You're not going to use jargon. And we're going to connect around a shared sense of purpose. And if you manage to inspire me as well, well, geez, that's fantastic. But you will only do that if you understand me. Now, you may have had to go around my teams below and get information from, you know, I don't know, my VPs, if I think of Shell that were running retail, manufacturing, trading, they will have a view on the biggest problems that face us. You synthesize that and then say, yeah, Craig, I'd love, yeah, I just need 15 minutes. I'd just like to tell you what I've learned and what I think. Because if you can't do it in 15 minutes, you're not going to do it in half an hour or an hour. And you won't get an hour in my diary if I don't really know you. So how do you synthesize something down? I mean, I often talk about JFK's moonshot speech in Houston in 62. Look that up and listen to how that is delivered. It's an inspirational speech. It doesn't really talk about product. Okay, it talks about a moon rocket and such like, but it doesn't go into any details. I'm inspired by what I'm hearing. So how are you going to do that as a salesperson? And you don't necessarily get taught this stuff. You get taught an awful lot about the product and how to sell it.
How are you sifting through, given that there's been so many acquisitions, nobody knows who does what anymore. There's this kind of chaos in the market. How do you make sure that as you're looking at providers, particularly for these large scale transformations, that you've got the right providers in the mix?
I think it's difficult, right? I mean, in big organizations, as you know, there's often a predefined list of suppliers around, and that may be broken up by certain business areas or processes or, you know, whatever it might be. But it's always good to bring new people in when you are doing an RFI or an RFP. But I personally am not a liker of RFIs or RFPs, particularly if they're run by a procurement. They're just sent out there. They're very black and white. There's no emotion behind it. There's nothing for people to lock into. So I think, again, if you have built up some good relationships with new players in the market, then bring them into the next cycle of whatever. Treat them as if they've been with you all that time. Keeps your predefined suppliers sharp, and it does allow you to bring in new things and try things out. You know, I always feel if you're running a big IT shop, having some form of innovation budget is good, where we're going to try something out for 10 people on a new platform. Yes, we've done our due diligence on that platform. It's secure. It'll fit in with our overall architecture, all those good things. So don't just wild card anything in that really isn't going to go anywhere. But new players, as we've kind of, I think, has kind of come out of this conversation, bring fresh and new ideas. Your big players often get a little, we've got Shell, Sonar. They spend X tens of millions with us a year. It's not really going to change. They can't really get off the platform. You know, we don't really sell to them much anymore, so we're not too bothered about them because they just keep doing what they're doing. Yeah, well, that's okay. But then you're not giving me what I need. Fresh ideas, thought leadership, challenging my thinking. Right? You know, another thing as C-suite is, if you're not careful, a lot of people keep saying yes to you and they want to please you. No, I want someone to come in who has the courage to challenge me. That's good. And I'm going to respect you for that. I'm going to trust you because you've done it. So think about how you build that list out. But it is difficult because then procurement, it sounds like I don't like procurement, but you know, then that procurement will step in and make them jump through a load of hoops of registering themselves and all this stuff that costs them money. And a smaller enterprise maybe can't afford that. Yeah, I've often sat down with smaller enterprises and said, you sure you want to go after Shell as a target account? I know you want it on your CV. I know you want it on your use cases. But to be honest, we're a pain in the ass to deal with, right? We demand a lot. We could start consuming a lot of your resources. Then ultimately, we don't buy. That's a big risk to you. Right? Think about whether you want this or not, because it's not necessarily the good thing you're hoping for. It could end in tears. And I've seen that happen a number of times with a number of other companies as well in my time.
One to be aware of for definite in terms of investing in greenfield accounts versus existing. And Craig, you've referenced the word thought leadership a couple of times in this discussion. What we're seeing through our work and our buyer data is for the first time, reputation in terms of the weighting that reputation has on selecting that winning provider has tipped ahead of relationships as the deciding factor. What gives you confidence when you're considering large investments beyond the seller themselves? I mean, you've talked about SMEs, but the idea of thought leadership, the reputation of an organization, you know, what role has that?
I think that's what you're looking for, right? Because as I has come out in this conversation a lot, I don't just want to buy from you and you walk away, right? I can buy a new sports car, right? But if I'm not convinced about the follow-up, then why would I do that? Yeah, slight digression. My wife is doing a startup in the luxury goods industry, right? What is very noticeable there is some of those providers are very happy to sell you a very expensive whatever, but you try and get follow-up service on maintenance or care of that article, don't want to know. They're interested in the sale. So I think, going back to a lot of things we've said, right, this is like building any relationship that requires reputation. You know, I ask people around to my house or they ask me around to theirs. I meet with their customers, right? Perhaps one-on-one. People tell me stories. So marketing, you guys in marketing are fabulous. I mean, you do a superb job. But I want to see real case studies behind that. I want to go and visit some of your customers and sit down with them and hear real stories. Because we know nothing goes perfectly. You know, when I talk to people, I go, hey, I've got as many scars. I've probably got more scars where I got it wrong than badges where I got it right. And those are the things you want to hear about. Oh, yeah, we did buy their software. Their software is great, but we made a hell of a mess implementing it. Let me tell you about it. All right, okay. So understanding what's behind someone's reputation, right? If you're new to me, this is all part of building it up, right? I want to get a personal relationship with you. You know, in some respects, I say the dance is no different to when you get to know a person as when you get to know a company. It's about asking questions and about listening to those responses. Them introducing you to their friends and colleagues, right? Then you get a feel for what they're really like. And so think about your reputation as well. Are you good at dealing with suppliers, or are you known as a real horror that just crashes them down on price? And then, you know, all of this is a two-way street, because relationships are, reputations are, and they can be lost and found in a day. So I think it's incumbent on you as the buyer to insist on certain things. I want to meet your customers. Yeah, you've shown me a great case study. Good. Can I go speak to Alicia since she's already done this? I'll be reinterested. And, you know, and then when I listen to you, I know you're not just telling me a good story because they took you to a nice dinner the other week. You're actually telling me some of the things that went wrong. Too many suppliers hide the things that go wrong. Actually, I'm more interested in those. Because the chances are, when I was at Shell, if BP got it wrong, I'll get it wrong as well. Because we're similar cultures, right? If another big company, I don't know, a Procter & Gamble or a Unilever got it wrong, I'll probably get it wrong.
Yeah, what are the learnings?
Yeah, so let's learn together. Back to my earlier point of trust your CXO to go to events, to go to things, and not just go there because they want to have nice wine and watch the event, but because they want to meet with other people with similar issues who will give you insight into what they did.
Fascinating. I've really enjoyed, Craig, digging into the kind of buyer dynamics, how that's shifting at an executive level, the kind of trust topic that we've talked about, and navigating these kind of multiple providers as they're shifting. I'd love to close on what would your advice be for providers looking to expand relationships, in particular with CIOs? You know, what would your playbook look like?
Listen. When you think you've listened enough, listen some more, right? Understand what's happening in my world as a CIO. Learn how to engage me. You know, different people, particularly from different cultures having worked around the world, engage in different ways, right? Remember, it's not about the product. It's about firing my imagination, right? Telling me short, engaging stories that make me realize that you've listened to me, right? You haven't come in cold. Remember, relationships take time. This may not fit your monthly, quarterly sales cycle. I couldn't care how your bonus. I feel sympathy for you, but it's going to take time, right? If you can, don't use slides, right? I hate slides. If you know what you're talking about, you don't need to refer to anything, right? You can leave me with something afterwards to look through so it reminds me of what you talked about. I think it's very, very important you organize what you're going to say. If you've met me a few times or you've never met me before, but you get the chance, this is your big chance to engage with the CIO or the CEO, you've got to start with a headline. And it's got to be something that gives me a reason to listen, right? So the first thing you say should make me sit up slightly and go, oh, okay, this sounds interesting. And we all know, because we've learned it throughout our lives, that the first 2 minutes is really, really important. It's critical. That's when you're going to make the connection. You know, bring your idea to life for me. I love it. And I try and do it myself. You know, I try and use words like imagine. What if? You know, because I've listened to you. I go, you know, imagine, Alicia, that you that your call center no longer had to use those five screens. You had to maintain all those systems. Just imagine what it would be like for them if they just had that one screen. How easy it would be to actually engage in the way you want people to engage, right? And have a simple core message that you repeat. You know, the old British Army one of, I tell them what I'm going to tell them. I tell them, then I tell them what I've told them, right? Because we work in threes and we take that on. Don't use jargon. Don't use jargon. Just use natural conversation. But when you've finished, and you know, pause as you go through it, give people chance to ask. But when you finish, I'm actually sitting there with my mind going, geez, that's an interesting picture. Oh, wow, you've painted something there. Now, at this point, I may not believe you can do it or not, but you've got my attention. And I'm sitting there going, wow, I can imagine that world. You know, it's like telling stories to kids. If you go back and you read a kid's book, it starts out with a quite descriptive, I don't know, Bruno the dog was laying in the long grass on a hot summer's day. I immediately go to that, my memory of lying in the grass, looking back, clouds, sun, and go, oh, wow, yeah, I'm there. So, but it's got to be done in a way you've prepared, and you've got to be prepared to take the time. If you rush it, there's no need to rush it. You're playing in the big time with big time C-suite folks. They don't have much time, but the minute you get there, you hook them in on this, they're going to want to know more.
So listen, 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 and you can't overemphasize the listen, and then really just think about that what you're envisioning, that what's the idea that you're surfacing.
So when you come back, it's relevant.
Yeah.
And I already know you've bothered to listen to me and you're giving me something relevant in return.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fantastic advice, Craig. Hope that helps all of our listeners as they're thinking about engaging, not just CIOs, but broader across the C-suite. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, Craig. Thanks so much for joining us, sharing your insight and experience around the world across multiple roles, both on the provider side and the buyer side. It's been a fascinating discussion.
Thank you very much indeed.
This podcast is brought to you by Momentum ITSMA, a leading B2B growth consultancy and pioneers of account-based marketing. Learn more at momentumitsma.com.